Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling, the world's best sales book, selling of all time. And I'm joined here today by my partner, the great Jen Gluckow. Would you introduce yourself to this amazing audience?
Hi, everyone. I'm Jen Gluckow, founder and CEO of Sales in a New York Minute.
And what's going on?
This is Sell or Die.
Oh, this is welcome to Sell or Die. Those are your only two options, actually.
Well, that's correct, if you're in sales.
I gave a talk yesterday to a group of 100 salespeople, and I reminded them that there's no reward for second place in sales because there was a lot of millennials in the audience, and they're looking for a trophy if they lose a sale.
There's no participation trophy here.
No. You either participate with a check or jack.
Someone was telling us the other day that their kid like had all these participation trophies and wouldn't display them because
Right. He
was like, I'm only showing the ones where I came in first. I like that attitude.
Yeah, the best thing you can do with a participation trophy is toss it, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. All right, so let's talk about today's show. Today's podcast is...
Wait. What? Today's show? We're having a show?
We're having a show. We're on the show.
Oh, this is Sell or Die.
Yeah, that's correct.
I got it. Okay.
Cool. Yeah. This is all about gamification today.
In other words, how to take out your iPhone or your iPad or even your desktop and learn by playing a game.
Correct. Learn about your products, your services, learn about the industry, learn about what's going on in your city, whatever it may be, but learn using or playing a game.
And you can learn more in 10 minutes than you can in a classroom of 2 hours.
Yeah, because it's more fun and interactive.
You're playing Jeopardy on your phone. And even if you get the wrong answer, it gives you the right answer and you learn it. You go, oh, it was that. And I think sometimes having the wrong answer, getting the right answer actually teaches you better. You retain a little bit more and you can play the game again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the game is smart enough to know that if you're getting the wrong answer in one area to keep focusing.
Oh, yeah.
If you're playing a smart game, that is.
The game is smarter than you are.
But anyway, let's talk about some stats. So in 2016, the gamification market was worth $2 billion,
yeah,
just shy of $2.8 billion target set by the M2 market research firm.
Got it.
And experts, you know, they're research experts.
Oh, yeah.
They're predicting that the market will grow 500%. To $11.1 billion by 2020. That's
now,
insane.
Even if they're half wrong, it's still a pretty good clip. And what it's going to say is that the learning and development people are going to have to embrace this rather than shun this and can't accept this as a threat to their existence, but rather as a boost to their ability to transfer their message, especially in the area of product knowledge, which is traditionally repetitive.
And boring.
Well, I mean, not all trainers are boring, just most of them. And you have to look at it from the perspective of, do I want my people out of the field for hours and hours at a time, fly them into a city for hours and hours at a time, and bore them to tears with something that could have been done with a game on their phone.
All right, so coming up, our guest today, Sam Cayucci, CEO of One Huddle.
Mm-hmm.
It's a company that specializes in gamification, and he's a gamification expert.
Funny, we're talking about gamification, and the CEO of the best gamification company just happens to be here
us
today.
It's funny.
Live and alive.
So Sam and One Huddle work with professional sports teams who know all about gamification, and they work with Fortune 500 companies all over the world. But he's going to walk us through why he thinks gamification works and why you should be looking at it to gamify your training.
Cool. And guess what? We're doing it and it's working. We've started on the gamification path. I think it's important to understand that we're not going to tout anything that we don't do ourselves. I think there's an authenticity about that that can't be denied. I actually played yesterday a game on Yes Attitude. Keep in mind, I wrote the book, and I only got 9 out of 10 correct. And so I think that there's clearly...
So like, I could compete against you, and I might do better than you.
No, you
did.
Will not beat me. There's no doubt.
I'm going to whip it out right after this.
That's another part of gamification. I won't comment on that. There's another part of gamification that is evident here, and that is the challenge that I'm better than you.
Well, I am better at this game, I bet.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, you know, before we move on, I think we should give our listeners a sneak peek into what's coming up.
Today?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, we've already done the interview, so I'm going to tell you, in terms of me, I think it was one of the best interviews we've had on the show, just in terms of what you as a listener can learn about what's now and what's next. Because there's things that are happening in the sales world right now that are going to rock the sales world.
Well, Sam actually knew of you before we met formally, and you'll hear about what he was sneaking into class, hiding under his book.
20 years ago.
In just a few minutes.
Okay.
You'll also learn about having a job where you're on 100% commission. I think a lot of salespeople these days don't want to take 100% commission jobs.
I do.
Maybe you want to take one?
Of course.
Yeah, I mean, so do I, but that's because you and I are confident in our selling skills, and you know we're going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of the newer salespeople
want a trophy.
And even some of the ones who have been in it forever, they want that base. They want the base, and what they don't realize is they can make more without it. But he's going to talk about 100% commissions.
If you have a boss and you're getting a base plus commission, why don't you ask them what would happen if you traded your salary in for a commission?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you try asking that question?
That would be cool.
Sorry for interrupting you, Jennifer.
No, that's okay.
But I meant it.
We're also going to hear a tip from one of your mentors. I think it's one of his best tips that I've ever heard you tell.
Yep.
And, dun, 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 your favorite, Jeffrey's favorite iPhone game.
Or two. that's a big dun, dun, dun. But one of the things that impresses me about this show is what we learn as the hosts of the show. And I've always said that salespeople want it now. They want answers now to make sales now. What can I do to make more sales now? What's the fastest way? What's the best way? And what's the easiest way to make a sale? And actually, Sam is going to teach you what is one of the fast ways to get new knowledge.
Yeah, he's going to talk about how salespeople are learning now most effectively.
So let's go to our guest, Sam Cayucci.
Well, before we go to our guest, Jeffrey, what's going on in your sales
world? No, I'm not telling. It's a secret.
I want to know.
All right. I just spent a week at the beach, and I'm writing the first writings of, I'm writing and annotating. Napoleon Hill wrote his first writings, and I'm annotating those writings. It'll be about a 250-page book. It's absolutely unbelievable, and it's Napoleon Hill writing 20 years before Think and Grow Rich. It's amazing. So I'm going to say that is my thing for this past week. It's the, you know, we have other things that are happening, but I think that's the biggest one.
So we're at the beach, and I go into the market.
You're with me?
Was writing too.
I got it.
And so I go into the market, and there's this guy there, and he's, "Hi, welcome to Hudson's." Not even looking at you, like almost like a robot. A robot may have been able to do a better job at this.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know,
because he would have had a smile plastered on his face.
And then you go to pay, and he was like, "Okay, thank you. Hope to see you again tomorrow." And it was like he was saying the right things, but there was absolutely no connection, and it just made me think about how wrong a person could get it. He's trying so hard, but there was no connection.
Because, number one, he was underpaid. Number two, he was doing what somebody else told him. He was doing what, but not how.
A lot of people are underpaid and still find a way to do their job well.
And number three, he didn't look one person in the eye.
Correct.
Unless he was asking them to sign the check, which allowed them to give a tip.
Okay, so the following day, I go back to the same market, and all of a sudden, he starts a conversation with me. Where are you from? What do you do? And it was like he actually wanted to know, and all of a sudden, we connected.
Well, there you go, Jen.
But it relates to sales.
What
just
a difference
about,
a day
think
makes.
Think about what...
Whoa, a song title. Oh, go ahead.
No, it's not a difference a day makes. It's a difference that personal connection makes.
Or maybe the attitude of the person serving.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he just woke up on the wrong side of the bed that day, and at $20 an hour or whatever the rate is, it wasn't quite enough for him to get into it, as it were. It was another day on the job.
Yeah.
And somebody said, now make sure you say welcome to everybody. Yeah, right, welcome, yeah, we'll give you a welcome. And welcome to Hudson, have a nice day.
But okay, you could be a salesperson and you could have a script and you could say all the right things, but if you are not connecting with the person, it doesn't matter.
Well, they don't, if you're gonna say welcome to Hudson's, you can say it's everything you want and just a little bit more, including when you come to the cash register.
Or like get out from behind the cash, that's funny. Or get out from behind the cash register and actually welcome me.
We sell a $2 ice cream cone for $5.
And tastes better.
Well, I mean, he could be funny about it. He could have a little bit of humor for himself, but he doesn't. When you repeat the same thing 100 times, it's boring.
Okay, but if you are a salesperson, you have a sales script, you have to repeat 100 times, the point is you need to make that connection.
Dump the script once you've memorized it and add your own energy and
yes,
your own creativity
absolutely.
And your own humor. That's what I'm
absolutely.
Saying.
Absolutely. All right.
So I'm gonna have buttons made up that say dump the script. No one will understand what it is, but I'll have the buttons. Let's get to Sam. Our first guest is Sam Cayucci, and we will see after this interview, after this amazing interview and interaction, we will see you and talk to you about it on the other side.
So, you know, I was a salesperson coming up. I worked for a number of sales managers. Sat through my fair share of trainings and sat through my fair share of managers trying to run training.
How did you first learn sales?
By doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got my first job and I said I could sell and I went and figured that out. I mean, I still remember my first job working.
What was your first job?
Bally Total Fitness.
Cool.
I was 17.
Oh my God.
I was 17 and I wanted to work and I lived in South Florida. So I used to go around to all the clubs and I applied for jobs and I was 17. So nobody would hire me. Tried to hire me for front desk, and I didn't want to do that. I wanted to do the big job, so I wanted to be a personal trainer. And nobody would hire me, so I ended up in Hialeah, which is...
I know where it is.
You know, they're not doing background checks in Hialeah.
No. And they are to make sure you're 21 that you can bet on the paramutuals.
That's it, yeah. And, yeah, Hialeah Park. And I came in, and they gave me an opportunity to be a trainer. I had an online certificate that I had gotten to be a trainer. It probably took me, 30 minutes of... answering questions randomly. Mm-hmm. And I got my first job, and I remember day
Good
one.
Good thing it wasn't for brain surgery.
Yeah.
That's a little scary.
I remember my first call list and being put, I put in a room, handed a call list, not even handed a call script, and I was calling, I didn't know, I took 12 years of Spanish in South Florida, but I only knew enough Spanish to get in a fight. So
right.
It didn't really help me, but, I started banging phones and, my whole journey being in sales, I started to wrap my head around the fact that training's got to get you ready to work as fast as possible. There's a lot of stuff that companies were deploying as education or knowledge training or learning. And I wanted to create a company with a product at One Huddle that upskilled you faster. Because if the training you do doesn't actually help you sell more, why do we do it?
Mm. Or if it doesn't provide accurate information, why are you doing it?
Right.
Or if no one wants to do it, why are you doing it?
Yeah, there's a fight, the whole thing. But I want to take you back for just a second because I need a plug here. First book you read on sales?
Sales Bible.
Mm. Whoa! And,
yeah. No. This is the best part, though. It's like a little kid reading Playboy magazine.
Yeah, so once I enrolled in college, I enrolled at Florida Atlantic University in one of my first classes, which I would go to school at 8 a.m., do the first hour class, go to work, because I worked through college, and I'd come back for the night class. And one of my morning classes was an accounting class. And instead of watching, my professor in the accounting class, I had underneath my binder the sales Bible. And for the whole semester, because I was thinking about what I was doing at 9 o'clock when I was getting out and I had to go back to work and hit the phones, and the sales Bible is still marked up to this day.
That is so cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man.
And even just, as a manager, I always thought that book we'd coach from. So 2-3 years later, when I became a manager, I just, my daily and weekly trainings were just pulled out of the book.
Thank you.
And thank you for violating my copyright law.
Hey, that was it. That was before the online platform, but yeah.
Okay, so fast forward now, you are on your own. You did a lot of physical training, correct?
Yes.
And you were in in Jersey at that time. You moved up to New Jersey. I know a little bit about your history, but talk about hanging out with Martin. And we're driving in from the airport yesterday, and he was telling me about this guy who he knows who moved from Jersey down to Charlotte, and he's living in a mansion now, and he's like a really cool guy. He's a trainer. And he goes, yeah, it's Martin Rooney. I'm like, one of my friends. It's the smallest world.
Actually, I think we have a podcast with Martin.
We do.
Yeah.
It's the smallest world that you could possibly imagine.
Absolutely.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what happened there? You were in charge of selling franchises? You were...
Yeah, so I always was hungry to learn. And I think that when I was in South Florida, I had a lot of success early on. And a lot of this whole thing is luck. So, I worked hard.
Hard work makes luck.
Exactly. The harder you work, the luckier you get.
Definitely. You think it's lucky, but you just stepped on the gas.
And I wanted to see if I could do it somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So I didn't feel, we all have been in environments where we get to a point working underneath an umbrella or a CEO or an executive.
Yeah,
where
we just feel
like we're not getting challenged. And I felt that way. Mm-hmm. So I moved to New Jersey to work for a company called Lifetime Fitness and got to go from working in a small business to now this corporate publicly held umbrella. And about a year and a half later, as I continued to move up, I had met Martin with another company in the area, which was Parisi Speed School. They were a franchise company. And I saw the opportunity to go from, I had worked in companies selling a membership for $90 a month or, a large corporate contract for a couple thousand. This gave me the opportunity to sell a $100,000 contract.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I said, I want to do that too. Mm-hmm. And, I think that, I look back at it and, I always looked at staying put as being the riskiest choice. And I'd always worked 100% commission at every role I took. And I thought it was, it was riskier to be in a paid salary position as a salesperson. And again, that pursuit is what led me to find somebody like Martin who, is an awesome guy. And,
when you're in a sales job, hang on a second. When you're in a sales job, you look for greener grass. Mm-hmm. And you can jump. Salespeople jump all the time. Millennials jump all the time.
But and sometimes you don't even have to look because you're being contacted by LinkedIn recruiters every other week.
However, when you own your own company, you stay put. And you stay put in a way that where you dig in and you become entrenched. I can remember very vividly calling my mentor when I left my t-shirt company and I started going around the country doing consulting. And I would call my guy and say, Earl, I'm in Phoenix. I just made $5,000. Earl, I'm in Denver. I just made $10,000. And I'd call him literally twice a week. And he would go, yeah, make $10,000 here. You make $5,000 here. You want to make a million? I go, yeah. He said, stand still. And I just was stunned.
Yep.
And so I ended up going back and standing still. And it works. But it was mine that I worked with, not somebody else's. I was never a pink slip unless I wrote my own. And you have to look at it that way, but if you're going to be a salesperson, then you look to be challenged on an everyday basis and you look to be taught every day so you can get better. But if you decide that you're going to make a leap and be an entrepreneur, dude, stay where you are. Don't go nuts.
And then you have to understand that when you've done that, you've jumped off a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was a light bulb that went off for me because eventually when I started One Huddle, the first few months you're trying to it's a risk. You're trying to build
this
concept. Yeah. You're trying to build a product. You're trying to recruit your best friends and people you knew who can come on board and help power you. And I remember the first 6 months, I was very selective on where I invested. I had made money in my last jobs and I was all in, bootstrapped my own cash, put it all in the middle of the table. But I remember the moment when I had a mentor tell me, you jumped off the cliff. Don't stumble down it and scratch your way down.
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah.
And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, you went full speed. And I think the minute that happened, I talked to a lot of entrepreneurs who they don't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
And if,
But you realize it looking back and you would do it the same way or?
I would have done it faster. Yeah.
There's no toe in the water. You're either in or out.
I looked at every investment being, a sales rep. I remember having to be responsible for building marketing brochures, and I said everything that past CEOs I worked for wouldn't invest in. There's a little arrogance here. So I'm going to spend on that. I'm going to hire the best graphic designer. And I'm going to,
of course,
my marketing spend is going to be 30%, not 5%.
You're about to get solicited by a lot of marketers who listen to this.
That's true.
No, but you have to throw the ball down the field a little bit. Yeah. You know, you have to open it up, and I'm totally okay with paying a learning tax. You know, I think you have to make sure you win more games than you lose. But as long as you're not closing yourself off, you know,
you need a learning tax and a guardian angel.
I like how you put it, a learning tax.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah, really.
That's
good.
Cool. Okay,
but
so now
hold
you
on,
have.
But you have to have that guardian angel. You have to have somebody who's there sort of spiritually guiding you to let you know which way to go.
And sometimes that's partly your gut.
Yeah, it's instinct, but
it's not
something's
just
driving
person.
Your instinct.
Yeah,
it's your knowledge. It's your upbringing,
previous work history.
Yeah,
success.
But something's guiding you where to go, combined with your ability to take a risk.
Right. I think that for some people aren't lucky enough to have mentors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in some cases, I think that's where education, like a lot of your book was a mentor to me at one point in my life, right? And I think that there's people have to be constantly, pursuing. The glass is not full. We can always fill it with more knowledge and more information. Because there are mentors.
Buy a bigger glass.
Right. There you go.
Okay. So now you have a sales team at One Huddle.
Yep.
And how do you train them?
So we use our product. Yeah, so we have, One Huddle is a mobile game platform for employee training. We take, we help companies take their existing learning content, videos, modules, content, and in addition to that, gamify it. And what we say is convert it into quick burst trivia games. And we're really, where we fit into an organization's training environment is they can play our games anytime, anywhere, in addition to everything else.
Think about, for 1 second, think about the game that you are addicted to.
Jeffrey, that would be Word Cookies.
Word Cookies I'm currently addicted to. But I have been addicted to other games like Angry Birds and other word games. I tend to like the Angry Birds thing because it's just aggressive. You don't have to think to do it. But the word games, you actually have to think to do, so it occupies your mind in a way where you're unscrambling words or you're figuring out words. And I like those kind of games. But
Just for the record, I'm convinced they're making new levels just for
me.
You. literally.
Okay.
As soon as you start to get towards the end, they add more levels.
But it is a game.
Mm-hmm.
And the game drives me back to the game. I'm not looking for the next lesson that I can learn from a video that I'm going to watch for 22 minutes, but I don't mind spending 5 minutes on a game. And I think that that's where your product takes over, because people will go back to the game. They want to play the Trivial Pursuit game. They want to play the Jeopardy game. They want to exercise their knowledge and see if they are correct.
Absolutely.
And when they're wrong, it pisses them off and they want to learn a little bit more. But what Sam's programs do, they take the whole team and they pit them against one another. It's like Sam in the lion's den. And it shows you who's the number one guy, the number two girl, the number three, number four, number five. And you almost go back into that game with, I hate that person who's number one. I'm going to kick their ass. And I'm going to make certain that I put myself in a position where I can be the leader of the team. I can be the leader of the learning.
The cool part is, while you're playing the game, you may not realize this because you're competing to try and be number one, but you're actually learning.
Right.
But you either know that New York City was founded in 1624 or you don't.
Right.
Or you guess.
Yeah, you could guess, but I can promise you this, when you see the right answer, it gets stored in there someplace. You know, I luckily for me, I played a lot of Jeopardy and a lot of Trivial Pursuit when I was growing up, so I have this wealth of useless knowledge. That I can call on at any moment in time. So you can ask me anything from the doo-wop era, and I can tell you the title of the song or who did it. If I'll name that tune, I'm like, bum, 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 bum. But I grew up with it. Or sports trivia. You can ask me about anything about any Philadelphia team, and I'm boom, 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 boom. But to learn about sales or to learn about business or to learn about service or to learn about ethics or to learn about any of the softer skills that you don't get in school, this is a great learning tool.
So what have you seen about the way training and education is changing in the marketplace?
Or I should say evolving as well.
Mm.
What's happening to it? How is it morphing into what you do?
Yes, I think that there's formal education that is kicking in, is moving forward at a snail's pace, kicking and screaming. Mm-hmm. It's being, and it needs to be continuously forced to innovate. I think that when I started One Huddle, I realized that young people are coming out of college less prepared than ever before.
Correct.
For the workforce today.
Correct.
You know, we're putting people in a 2017 economy with, you know, training from the 1980s still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's being kind. Some of it might be from the 70s.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we have to, if we're going to upskill people, we have to do it on their terms while still influencing with the stuff we need. We know they need to know.
And they may not want to be in a classroom where they have to raise their hand and go, teacher, pick me. I hated those people anyway because I was never the guy that raised his hand.
There was a Microsoft study that came out, and I'm going to tee you up on this one. There was a Microsoft study that came out a few months ago, and it said the average attention span for a young person today is about 8 seconds.
Oh, wow. I was going to go 2 minutes.
A goldfish is 11.
Wow. Cool.
Now, they did it on Canadians. Wow. I don't know. I don't want to unpack that. Yeah. But it was...
But they also drink Tim Horton coffee, so you have to discount some of that.
But you're
we drink
coming out...
We drink coffee, by the way.
Right.
Probably too much today. We're coming out of college less prepared. A cool stat that I saw that really fired us forward was the average millennial today will have spent over 10,000 hours on a game platform before they hit 21.
Wow.
So they're experts at earning points, going to levels, competing. Mm-hmm. This is a mechanic they understand.
Listen, I have an 8-year-old daughter. She's already at level 3 on anything she plays. Dad, what level are you on? Like, seriously, what level am I on?
She's competing.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, she calls her little girlfriends on her iPhone to play the game with them while they're talking on the phone.
Oh, it's really cool. They're all in virtual worlds and
they
they're
can
in the
play
same world
in each
playing
other's
at the
games.
Same time, but in different houses, and it's crazy.
And this is what we say. There was a game that was popular when I was coming up. It was called NBA Jam. And mm-hmm. with this game, you could dribble the ball down the court, mm-hmm. jump up in the air, do 3 somersaults, dunk the ball, and the glass exploded.
Yep.
If you go out on a basketball court and you're a young person today and you dribble down the court, you can't even do a layup. The virtual world's a hell of a lot more exciting for you.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
So we always say if, you know, you want to training, we have to training, development, learning, knowledge. We have to lean into the things that people are already good at. And we understand millennials, 9 out of 10, another study, 9 out of 10 said that they're better than a coworker. So we're naturally competitive.
Mm-hmm.
Naturally understand gaming mechanics. We know
being a millennial,
means.
Correct?
I'm a millennial. Yeah, I'm at the oldest end of the millennial spectrum, but we understand what it takes to level up. And with our platform, it's funny, we sell from this millennial point of view, but mm-hmm. wouldn't you know it that 60% of our users aren't millennials?
Exactly.
Wow.
You know? And by the way, if you play basketball but you can't go to your left, this is the game for you.
So yeah, cool. that's in a nutshell. I think that back to your question, where is knowledge and education mm-hmm. going? Think that if we thought about deploying educational material with the same intensity and time that we think about branding and positioning our product to a consumer, mm-hmm.
They're spending millions, sometimes billions, to brand that, put the meme out there so that everybody remembers that things go better with Coke.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is they're not training their salespeople to reinforce that message when they get out into the field.
Right.
They spend a fraction of that money.
And it goes, you know, if I walk into another sales training where somebody says to sell me this pen, you know, I'm going to scream.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what happens. And I think that if we just thought about our employees like they're our customers, our most valued customers, we would say, you know what, making training fun makes sense. Doesn't have to be serious. There's no scientific research. I have not found a stat that says making training serious makes it better.
Exactly. And just by the way, this pen is only used to sign major contracts. You keep it in your pocket, and anything over $100,000, you pull this pen out. That's how you sell the pen.
Oh.
Okay, but I'm reminded of the Jim Rohn quote, "A formal education will earn you a living. Self-education will earn you a fortune." And you can add to that, gaming your self-education will earn you an uber fortune if you decide you want to play the game.
So But a lot of sales managers out there think that you can't learn from a game. Mm-hmm. Okay? The teaching has to happen where someone's face is there and they're teaching you exactly what to do or what to say in the situation. How do you respond?
Yeah, I would say that we think that the way learning is deployed is backwards today. Learning's supposed to be hard. We're supposed to struggle through it. And if we struggle through it, we retain it longer. So there's no magic bullet in the training process, mm-hmm. in the learning process. You have to do a bunch of stuff. We would never open a health club and just have one treadmill, right? Mm-hmm. We are multidisciplined when we train.
And you got 20 different machines.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think it comes from that position first. But with a game, think about it. Quizzing and testing is the most powerful way to drive retention. But we're just rebranding it as a game.
Retention mm-hmm. of information.
Retention
not
of information.
Not necessarily of people.
100%. Yeah. So retention of knowledge, mm-hmm. which is the key to learning. And the key to learning isn't how quickly you understand a concept. It's how quickly you forget it.
Mm. Well, there's two parts then. How quickly you understand it or forget it or apply it. Because if you learn it and then apply it, it becomes more of second
Correct.
Nature than if you learn it and don't use it.
We will naturally forget everything we've learned in our lifetime by either, you know, it not being sticky enough or force, right? At the end
right.
of the day,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be naturally forced to forget. It's training's got to plug the hole. And if you can retain the things you learn from a exercise, a workshop, a seminar, a training, a book, longer, you can act on it better. And if you act on it, we all understand that that's the highest level that of training, like we talked about, highest level of training is doing.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Okay, so let me explain this to it. Text myself so I can tweet it. In college, they teach you to know, but they don't teach you to apply. So when a kid gets out of college, he's got a bunch of education or she's got a bunch of education, but the teacher, the professor, has not taught them how to apply that education in the real world. And that's why they are afraid when they get out into that workforce.
That's more than Twitter characters.
Yeah,
I think you're over the limit. I got a great baseball analogy for you. It's not a Philly, but...
Let's hear it.
Oh, so this guy gets up to the plate and he can't hit the ball out of the infield. That's a Philly analogy, but go ahead.
So three stages to the... In our opinion, it's three stages to the learning process. The mm-hmm. first stage is knowledge. So imagine knowledge is one of the hardest stages of learning. That's when you're reading the book, you're consuming the info, you're watching the module, and you're trying to understand it. At the knowledge phase, again, you know how to, in a sales scenario, I have the script memorized. You know, I'm getting to the point where I have the information I want to share at my disposal. The competency phase, and now I can recognize the fastball. Competency phase, I know what I need to do to hit it. At the competency phase, I can duplicate and act upon the skill that I've trained on. So I know how to say what I want to say, when I want to say it. The mastery level, and I use Gary Sheffield as this example. So what was unique about Gary Sheffield?
He hit a lot of home runs.
What about his swing?
It was the worst swing on the planet. But he could hit a home run.
What would he do when he was in the box, though, right? The weird...
Yeah, everything you could possibly do to distract the pitcher, he did.
And he had a unique swing that...
You wondered how he wound up, but he always... No, it was a perfect swing. But the way he got to the swing was his unique stance in the batting box.
So we look at mastery as understanding the skill or the action at such a high level that you can begin to put your own personal touch on it.
Got it.
So at that level of mastery... You know, Sheffield can get in the box and he can screw around with his hands. He can play with his bat. He can do whatever he wants. But he understands it at such a high level that he can customize his talking points. He can act upon it in such a way. So the goal of knowledge or a learning process should be to get me through the knowledge phase as fast as possible. Because I believe that it takes a heck of a lot longer because the tools that are sometimes being used aren't sticky enough. And if we can accelerate you, we come out with a new product on Monday. How do we get everybody selling it from the same position as soon as possible? We get them through that phase. Competency is where the best coaching can be deployed.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
I'm going to throw, you want to, go ahead, you go.
Well, okay, so part of this that we haven't spoken about that I think is a key part is the ranking.
Yep.
Is the leaderboard. So how does that, how have you seen that affect the education process?
People want to know where they stand. You want to know where you're ranked, where you're rated. And I don't care if they're a sales rep or they're a service rep.
I always knew I was better than Dave.
Yeah.
And now I've proved it.
I mean, can you imagine if you create an environment where your employees compete against each other
on
something like training? You know they're competing on the sales board.
Of course.
You know they're competing on other outbound calls.
And sometimes they don't know where they stand on the competition field because there's nothing to rate them other than how many sales they made that month. And you're going to go, yeah, Bob's got a great territory. He's really lucky.
He's getting better leads.
Yeah, he got better leads than I did. And Bob's a bastard.
Yeah. And rating and ranking.
Okay.
Let people know where they stand. And then back to the game. This is where most games fail. Because by the way, gamification has become this buzzword. Now it's overused.
Yeah.
If I don't know how to get to the next level, or I don't think it's fair, I quit.
Mm.
And I think you can apply that in your own companies the same way. If I don't know how to get to the next level, maybe moving up the ladder, or getting to the next position, or in our game environment, if I am at some point feeling like the cards are stacked against me unfairly,
or my boss doesn't recognize how good I really am,
we zone out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Screw my boss. He's a lousy boss.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm going to go back to information and knowledge. My personal philosophy about training is transference. The person who's training me, whether it's a computer or a human being, has to deliver a message that I say to myself, I get it, I understand it, I agree with it, understand, agree. I actually think I can do it. And now I say to myself, I'm willing to try it, or I'm willing to apply it. So understand, agree, in principle, believe that you can do it, and then try. Then I know that my message has been transferred. I can do that. Okay. But I have a separate set of standards for me where somebody gets it, and they say, okay, I'm willing to apply it. And once they apply, they go through levels of proficiency. Like you start out and you fail, you make your first 25 calls and you fail, then finally you make a sale, and then you make 5 sales, then you make 10 sales, and then you master. So it's understand, apply, proficient, mastery. Those are the steps that I go through, and very similar to what you're saying, but at the mastery level, you can ad lib. You can go into the sales call, like I'll go into a sales call of a Fortune 500 company president, and I'll say, you want to buy now or you want to hear the pitch? That's ad-libbing. Or I walk around the room, so he or she gets up, walks around the room. I sit at their desk. The minute they get out of their chair, I sit at their desk. It's a shocker to them.
Right.
But that's part of ad-libbing. That's part of being a master and ad-libbing, or having the guts or the balls to ad-lib and do something that's so out of the box or so extraordinary that they kind of like you for doing it. They kind of like you for having the chutzpah to, you know, sit in his seat and say, and when, you know, sitting in this seat, it makes me want to make a decision.
Yep.
You want to check my bag? I have a contract in there in a pen. Press hard, 3 copies. So it's fun to do. I think mastery allows you to have a good time at it.
Yeah.
Rather than be structured about it to a point where you have to be mechanical.
And I would say there to understand today what it takes to get somebody to mastery, it's harder than ever.
Oh, yeah.
The average young person today, let's just take, and I'm not trying to pick on millennials,
come
but
on,
if you're 23, 24 years old,
yeah,
you've spent so many minutes on a cell phone talking or speaking to people.
Or texting.
Compare the verbal communication to somebody who's 32 to somebody who's 42.
Mm-hmm.
32 and 42 have double, triple, quadruple the amount of talk time. If I had a meter over head and said how many minutes I spent talking to another human being, an average 22 or 23 year old have a fraction of past generations.
My sister and I are 10 years apart, exactly. Right. And she wants to text and Snapchat and communicate all through these apps. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk on the phone.
Yep.
I want to call her.
Well, the thing is, customers today are, now they are texting, they are you know, communicating via technology. However, they are also still talking. So you have, again, I think it's a harder hill to climb than ever because you have to get that experience is critical to learning.
Mm-hmm.
So in training, you have to accelerate those situations and experiences. Because if I have half of the talk time that you do, You got to be crazy to think I can walk into the same selling situation as you and have the same, that we talked about, the New York talking points. Small talk.
Mm-hmm.
Not just traditional product knowledge and not the traditional sales pitch, but being able to have life experience to pull from to have a conversation.
So tell us about that story. We were talking yesterday, mm-hmm. and you were talking about how you showed us a game on New York, and we started thinking, okay, so why does this even matter?
Yep. Yeah, so at One Huddle, we work with a lot of sports companies. One of our clients is the New York Mets.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we've talked about is it's we spend so much time in training focusing on how we talk about our product, which we should.
Mm-hmm.
But the hardest part today to train is not what you say when we're sitting in the seats and I say, hey, Jen, hey, Jeff, what do you think? And I start talking about the product. The hardest part is what I say to you when we're in the elevator going from the first level to the third level. How do we just have a off-the-cuff conversation?
Mm-hmm. Or how about getting us to the elevator?
Right. Those in-between moments, mm-hmm. and I haven't seen a lot of formal training that I've come across, and you've seen, you know, a lot as well, that has training on that type of information. So in our games, one of the most powerful games we build, we have games on the city of New York. Hmm. So if I'm a sales rep selling in New York City, I need to know the way that the subway system works. I need to know the history of Rockefeller Center. I need to know the boroughs and demographics, because all of this information puts me in a more powerful position to connect and communicate with a customer that works in New York.
You just
Very
said
cool.
experience is critical to learning.
Mm-hmm.
That's a brilliant statement. I hate to tell you this right to your face, but that's a brilliant statement. It's also critical to mastery. I don't think you can master without experience.
Correct.
I mean, you go to a brain surgery school and you get out of brain surgery school and you've already operated on a bunch of dead people, but now you got to operate on live people. And that causes more sweat to come on your brow. And after your first 10, you're feeling kind of okay, but after your 500th one, you're feeling like a king. You know, you know what to do. You got it down. And that's when you develop your own technique. That's when you develop your own mastery. You didn't like how this is done. Have I ever tried this? Let me try this to make sure I don't kill the guy, but I want to see if I can get this little procedure to go a little bit better. And everything in sales is surgery. You know, you want to make sure the patient lives and that at the end they can pay the bill.
Right. Make them pay before.
But you want it to be successful. You know, you want the guy to walk and you know, have a great time and come up and thank you for saving their life. And it's a whole process. But I believe that we're both on the same path when it comes to mastery. Mastery means you got it, you own it, and you can ad lib it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And to the point of surgery, we always say nobody wants to get on a plane with a pilot that just read the manual.
Correct.
Exactly.
And
or a surgeon that's been hanging around a drugstore for 3 years and thinks he can get it.
I don't care if they stay at a Holiday Inn Express. Doesn't matter.
Exactly. You know, hoping they stay at the Four Seasons, actually.
you have to give people those experiences. And I think way too many companies employ a philosophy of train and pray. And the train part is still questionable. 1 or 2 days of talking at people is not training.
Correct.
And doing unto others what was done unto you is BS.
Well, and 5 days of training is worse than 2 days of training. I'd rather have a day of intense training and then come back again in 3 months and have another day and then come back in 3 months and have another day than have 5 straight days. You're dead at 5 straight days. Right. You don't know what the hell to do.
Mm-hmm.
It comes back to training at you versus having an engaging and interactive experience to bring you along. But again, I think there's a heck of a lot of people that, again, they deploy onto others what was done onto them. You know, I can't tell you how many.
Because that's all they know.
I mean, how many sales reps do you know that have PTSD from a role play that went wrong?
Yeah.
And training should build you up.
Right.
It should make you confident. You know, a job is a heck of a lot more than just a paycheck.
But you should also, there's a right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And there's shades of gray. But I wrote a thing, by the way, called 50 Shades of Sales. Because it's very emotional. And it's very sensual when you make the sale. It's like not as good as sex, but it's right, top five. But the challenge is that if you can't take a wrong answer and have the personal fortitude to try to get to the right answer, sales is not for you. You have to be able to take a door slammed in your face, a phone slammed down in your head, be told to get the hell out of here. I recommend that every salesperson rent an apartment in New York City for 3 months and cold call.
And think about that, right? Because I know when I was a kid, I would go out and I would play, and I was told you come back when the streetlights come on.
Mm-hmm.
But when the streetlights came on, right, I was home.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, there's no judgment here, but the reality is kids today don't get to do that as much.
No.
It's a different world. And
they're
we
doing
don't,
that in a game.
In a game.
Correct.
Yeah, oh, the streetlights are on. I got to go do something
are
else.
On. Exactly.
Who do I kill?
No, let's have a party. It's the after party time.
But bumping.
In the game.
Like scraping your knees and scraping
right.
your elbows.
Yep.
You know,
didn't happen.
We
no.
played, you know, tackle football on the street. You know, we didn't know what we were doing. But handling failure to what you're talking about, we got to teach people how to handle it. And we have to give it. We have to put them in those situations where they understand that happens, because they're not, they're coming into those jobs where there's a heck of a lot of participation trophies on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
It's, we have to understand the person we're training, not just the person that we're selling to.
Wow, Sam. Wowed me in that interview, especially the part where he hid the sales Bible inside of his finance book.
I wonder how many other people have done that.
Oh, lots. Yeah,
that's pretty cool, I'm
sure. But that's very flattering. And first of all, he did it. Second of all, we've connected.
Yeah.
And he did it. Third of all, we have Martin Rooney in common.
That's so crazy.
And all kinds of things are happening, including I am genuinely jacked about what he's doing and how we can incorporate that into the Gittimer Learning Academy by gamifying every single test inside the Learning Academy. And that's going to happen soon. So if you're on the GittimerLearningAcademy.com, and today might be a good day to go there and sort of check it out, little by little, you're going to see gamification of literally everything, starting with the Yes Attitude book, which mm-hmm. is already in gamification process. And if you, I mean, the foundation of attitude is something that you cannot deny. It's foundational and fundamental to whatever you do. And that's why we're going to start with the Yes Attitude book, because that's everything. And all of our customers currently are demanding that.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to put it out there for you, the listener, because we have you in our heart, which hopefully will lead to your wallet so you can subscribe to the Gittimer Learning Academy. Thank you. Jenny?
Okay, so I want to talk about Sam's interview and this concept of always being hungry to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in a class learning about something that maybe he wasn't so passionate about. And underneath, he's reading your book because he couldn't wait to read it and then go and implement what he was learning.
Hungry to learn is part of the statement. I think it should also say hungry for answers.
Yeah.
That the salesperson is out there looking for an answer. What's the best way to do this? What's the best way to do that? If I have an answer to do that, then I'm not going to trip. I'm not going to run into a brick wall. Somebody's going to say no. Yesterday in this seminar that I gave to literally 100 salespeople, I said, how many of you have ever gotten a price rejection? And they all raised their hand.
Of course.
I said, how many of you have ever had a customer say, I'm not interested? And they all raised their hand. I said, dude, what that means is you're not interesting. And it was like, oh my goodness.
Oh, I need to take responsibility.
Right.
It's
it was a total revelation to them. And all they have to do now is fix the fact that they're boring, and they're going to get, it's not going to connect you every person every time, but it's certainly going to help.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm saying.
I think it's pretty cool that gamification is changing the way we as adults are learning. Think about the impact it's going to have on kids.
Well, the kid will take it for granted. They're born with the phone cradle. You know, they have that way that they mm-hmm. hold the phone. Here, I'll show you.
Show me.
Well, I hold the phone like this. They hold it like this. Like it's...
The phone cradle. That's
exactly.
Funny.
Like it's biblical.
Like it's a baby.
Exactly. But they know what to do instinctively and intuitively. You go around a mall, and you'll see a bunch of kids holding their mother's phone, and they're holding it exactly
phone.
The right way.
Or their phone.
Yeah, Gabrielle's had one since she was four.
Five.
Okay, five.
Please, four is extreme. five is already extreme, but four is taking it to a whole new level.
Okay, so, but the bottom line is, this is a kid who gets it.
Mm-hmm.
And your kid gets it, too. get him a phone. Well, I want to wait till they're 11. No, don't wait till they're 11. They'll be 6 years behind the curve. Get him a phone now and cool. play games on it. Because they're playing games on it anyway. I'm in competition with Gabrielle all the time with word bubbles. Mm-hmm. And it's a, you know, I'm a level three dad. Where are you? I'm like,
Now, the funniest is when she says, Dad, I need you to not play for the next few hours. Right. She wants to catch up. It's pretty cute.
Okay, so the Sam thing is a benchmark, and the Sam thing is going to the moon. And my challenge to you is, where's your moon? Are you still in the classroom learning product knowledge the old way? Or wouldn't you rather even take a combination of gamification and classroom learning in order to be able to advance faster and get greater retention? The game doesn't just help you learn. The game helps you retain what you have learned in the classroom or on the previous game.
So, Jeffrey, I have a question for you. It's a little bit off topic, but you were talking about it earlier in the interview. When Earl, your mentor, said, Jeffrey, you want to make a ton of money, stay put, stand still.
Well, I said, I'm traveling here making 10 grand, traveling here making 5 grand. If you want to make a million, stand still.
Stand still.
Was the exact... And it was like stunning when I heard it.
But how did that... What did you do after that? How did you change your actions?
I bought a property in Indiana, and I began to, because we were traveling around the country at the time, and this is to, just so to put it in a frame of reference, 1976. I decided that I was going to try to find something that would plant me greater. And it took me a while. I had an imprinted sportswear factory that I put together, and that kept me. I had my mother was in the trade and technical school business. I acquired a couple of those, and that sort of kept me. But it wasn't until I moved to Charlotte and began to do consulting locally and live locally that I actually got my feet planted on the ground and began to write. Writing led me to the road, but I was grounded and centered in Charlotte.
So you invested your time into the community.
I invested. I did. The Thompson Children's Home was my charity of choice. Still is. I did seminars for the United Way. I became involved in the community to a point where I became known, and my column began to appear in the Charlotte Business Journal, where it stayed for 15 years every Friday, and that grounded me in the city of Charlotte. And My article hasn't been in there for half a dozen years, but people still see me in the grocery store and go, oh, I read your column all the time. Like, dude, it hasn't been there for 6 years. but they will find me and talk to me and tell me. You saw what happened at Belly Acres the other day. Mm-hmm. So you have to become known in your community as a person of value. You have to become known in your marketplace as a person of value, and then your phone will begin to ring with interested prospects who want to hire you and give you money.
Thank you for joining us on the Sell or Die podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or whatever you use to get your podcast. Just search Sell or Die, and please rate and review us 5 stars.
The rating is very important because it will allow you to find us a hell of a lot easier, and it will allow us to find new viewers and new listeners easy, and we are upping our technology because we have decided to invest in the podcast process, and you're going to see some amazing technological advancements take place in the podcast business very shortly, and this will help you because if we have a podcast, you should have one too, don't you? I mean, aren't you podcast-able? Don't you have anything great to say? Just bring your kids, have them sit next to you. I'm doing it with ours.
So follow us on Twitter.
Yep. You can find me at Gittimer.
I'm at Jen in a New York Minute.
And we're the Facebook people at / Jeffrey Gittimer.
Or facebook.com/ Jen in Any Minute.
We have a producer. Who is it?
Our amazing producer is Doug Branson.
The great Doug Branson.
Our technical director is Chris Hill.
The great Chris Hill.
Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to get out there and sell, even if your ass falls off.